clinical psychologist Kosi Giani joins me, and we'll be talking about the silent treatment. Good morning to you, Kosi. I thought I was going to make a joke about the silent treatment by just keeping quiet and putting you on air.
I was about to say, well, you're going to pull a silent one on me.
I wanted to, but then I just thought, it's just not going to work, is it? Because I'm sure you'll wonder, what the heck is going on?
Yeah. And I would hang up on you and go silent on you.
But good morning to you, and definitely no silent treatment from me.
Great. That's a good start. Let's get into it.
No, for sure. So, look, I guess it's something that does happen where I think all of us can relate to this. If you've been in a relationship, if you've even in just a platonic friendship, there's some disagreement, the two of you had words, or you're upset about something and you just go silent.
Yeah.
So, you know, how does it come about, and what is the ultimate impact of it?
Let's talk about the mechanics of it. So the issue is, you know, as in any relationship, starting with our relationship to ourselves, in fact, there's bound to be differences of opinion. There's bound to be competing needs, interests, wants, and priorities.
Mm. Right?
And the reality is, we are not always going to have our way. So the challenge then becomes, how do we deal with such crossroads in relationships, right? So the problem is not that we're going to have problems. It is how we deal with them. So if we then unpack the mechanics of silent treatment, it is, in its most rudimentary element, it is a basic instinct, right?
Mm-hmm.
It is a basic instinct for survival and defense. It's that we either will dilate or we will constrict.
Huh.
And so we typically will talk about the fight, flight, or freeze mode. Those are basic instincts, right? And then silent treatment expresses the flight or freeze mode of defense. So this is when we are disappointed in some way or other.
Mm.
How do we deal with that? So silent treatment becomes that constriction. We go into flight mode or freeze mode, just go into load shedding, shut down, and that's it.
I find it quite fascinating, and you know, especially when you break it down like that, you know, that we have those three basic instinctual responses to stress, right? To harm, and that, you know, you either fight, you try to get out of there, or you freeze, and then that silent treatment is basically the latter two. Now, is there a difference? Because I can imagine where, you know, you have a situation arising with silent treatment. So maybe, you know, you would have done something that you may be unaware of, or you're aware that you've done something that offended me, upset me in some way or the other. And lo and behold, I don't, you know, communicate it to you. I don't say anything to you. I just remain quiet and silent. That's where it begins and ends, right? Alternatively, we have a confrontation. We fight. And, you know, you and I, we fight. And then suddenly I just go quiet on you. I ghost you, so to speak. Is there a difference between the two, where in the one you're not even made aware, or you're not even aware that I am angry at you and I just remain silent? And in the other one, that you have, not a sneaky suspicion, but you know that there was some type of a confrontation, there was some type of a disagreement, and lo and behold, now we're not talking.
Sure. Yeah. So there are those two modes of expression of that. So, for example, as you say, if a person, there's been some form of, let's call it psychological or emotional injury of sorts. Hopefully we're not talking physical. As a way of a person expressing that, they go into silence rather than, you know, verbal expression that, look, something has happened. So what it then calls upon you is that this is a flag that says something has gone amiss here.
Mm.
And it then becomes your responsibility, in a sense, that when they go into that construction mode, it places the responsibility on you to go kind of, you know, dig them up. They go into, they withdraw into their shell, and it becomes your job to kind of dig them out of there and you know, explore, interrogate, find out what happened for them to be behaving in this way, because it is not our, let's call it, natural inclination, relational inclination, right? We are out there, we put ourselves, relationship is about connection. It is about conversation, it's about communion with each other. And so when we go into that withdrawal, into the shell, it is an indication that there is some form of injury to the self, right? So whether it is psychological or emotional, the self feels dishonored in some way. Something has gone amiss, and therefore it is an expression of that stress as a result of that. Or, as you say, you know, you may enter into engagement and find yourselves at in opposing opinions. You're stuck, right? And one way of dealing with that would be a person would withdraw into silence rather than continue the engagement. And that's usually also that they feel, in that engagement, they feel unsafe. And therefore, they go into that shelter for safety.
I mean, there's so many tropes that I can think of. You know, for one thing, we tend to say stuff like silence is golden, right? There's this constant, let's be honest, quite sexist joke, or you know, jokes about, you know, my at least my wife is quiet, you know, type thing, usually aimed against women, you know, and appreciating, inverted commas, their silence. But I mean, is that the case that you, I don't know, you just both stay quiet and you let it blow over? Or is it, is it harmful?
Healthy silence, let's put it that way. There is healthy silence or withdrawal from conversation. So there's a principle that, you know, when you look and you read the dynamics, so it's not only that's important, and this is what we would refer to as a crucial conversation. It's not only important, the content, in other words, the issues that you're talking about, but it is equally important, the context or atmosphere of conversation. And when you see that perhaps we've become so emotionally wound up that our conversation is, we are expending a lot of energy, but we are not getting anywhere. And all that's doing is that, you know, we're just spiraling downwards. So silence may be a useful point in that, when you observe that sort of behavior. Or, we've wound each other up so much that we are not making progress. It may be a good point to say, let's take a time out. It is important, however, how you do that. Because when we're talking silent treatment, we are not talking about that constructive, positive, and proactive form of withdrawal from conversation that says, look, I'm noticing that we are attacking each other. We are not dealing with this. Our emotions have gotten the better of us. We are not dealing with this in a constructive way. So maybe let's give each other 5 minutes. Let's just count to 10. Let's sleep over it. There's many ways of dealing with that, right?
Yeah.
But it is how you communicate that. When we're talking silent treatment, it is uncommunicated. All you see is this load shedding. The person shuts down.
Load shedding.
And, you know, and generally they kind of become impenetrable. You know, you don't make any headway. They disconnect, so to speak. They go AWOL on you and ghost you, as you said.
Yeah, and that's the thing, isn't it? Because I was about to say, because the one is constructive, it's almost by agreement. The two of you are, and they're not happy agreement necessarily, but at least there's an understanding that, listen, my temper is elevated, yours is elevated, we're busy screaming and shouting at each other right now, we're not making sense. So let's take a break there and then come back. And that's the point, isn't it? It's not indefinite. There's an end point.
Strategic move.
Yeah.
To move forward. You know, you take a step back in order to take steps forward. Whereas with silent treatment, we are just taking steps back.
So now that we've been able to sort of identify and almost define what silent treatment is, I mean, to me, it automatically sounds harmful, but maybe we need to almost articulate what is harmful about it. Why is it not the best way of going about dealing with conflict, and not just only that, but why it could be damaging, actually?
Well, what is harmful about it is that it literally, you know, disconnects from the conversation and therefore from the connection and relationality with the other person. It is abandonment, in essence. And of course, you know, human beings are propelled by invisible force of motives. So people, you know, we say human behavior is teleological. It is purposive. It is never just random. So people might use silence for different reasons. Silence can be a form of violence. It is. It becomes a form of passive aggression in order to punish you, because perhaps they feel harmed, and therefore the best form of defense becomes that attack in a passive aggressive way.
And I guess it leaves so much unresolved, because I mean, obviously there's an underlying cause. There's a reason why.
Absolutely.
You know, I'm not.
It's not only. Yeah, it not only resolve, it not only does not resolve the existing issue, it creates a new layer of issue to deal with, right? And so it is, you know, it's for that reason that, you know, we would kind of say it is not a constructive way of dealing with conflict. We are bound to have conflict, but there are some ways are more constructive than others.
And I guess that's the point of it, is that we need to, so that the point will always be that there will be conflict. The question is, how do we resolve it, you know, appropriately and deal with it?
Yeah. And let's also kind of connect the dots here in terms of personality, right? If we talk about introversion and extroversion, let's call it the two polarities of personality. So people that are introverts are more likely to go into silence. And I'm not saying silent treatment in the way that we've defined it, right? But they're more likely to go into silence as their default mode in a stressful situation. And they are more interior. Introverts are more interior. They process information silently and will only perhaps be willing to step out and express verbally later. Whereas extroverts are the opposite. Extroverts think with our mouths open, and we process information as we go along. So here's the challenge that's likely to happen in relationship. And interestingly, there's the prevalent dynamic that introvert is paired with an extrovert. And so what happens when they're at that crossroads? The extrovert wants to talk about it now. And I guess that's where at least she's quiet today, you know, because the extrovert, the inclination, the default inclination of an extrovert is to talk about it now.
Yeah.
Whereas an introvert may need space to process it for themselves first, silently, internally. And in that case, an extrovert may feel pushed out, may feel rejected, may feel abandoned. And the inclination of an extrovert is to then, you know, dilate and kind of want to and overwhelm an introvert, because let's talk about it, let's deal with it, let's get it out of the way now. And that's likely to threaten an introvert even more so, and they withdraw even more so into their shell. And so it becomes a vicious cycle where none gets their needs met.
I get you. 011-883-0702. Please do give us a call, you know, and share with us also, you know, your own experiences around this particular issue, you know, especially related to the silent treatment, and what impact perhaps it even had on you, you know, whether it is something that you welcomed or something that you regret now. And I think that's the ultimate issue, isn't it? Because is it all too often?
Absolutely.
It comes at a cost. Exactly.
Indeed. Yeah.
You know, could it also be part of the reason why the silent treatment then becomes a thing, for lack of a better term, is because all too often we do not necessarily have the equipment, you know, or the tools to be able to deal with these conflicts.
Sure. And it's about the skill to express discontent. It's about a skill to deal with those crossroads. And here's the thing, we take ourselves for granted as human beings. We learn all sorts of things. We become engineers. We learn everything, except that we leave the self unattended to and take the self for granted. And so what then happens is that we, for the most part, you know, live and relate unconsciously. So if we look at this behavior of silence, there will have been a history to it also. through socialization, right? So while a child perhaps may have that inclination towards silence, it gets reinforced in early years. Through in various ways, and they learn that this is the way to get my way is by going into this. So if they sulk into the corner, they get the attention perhaps, whereas maybe when they don't, they don't get rewarded in families. You know, there's families where, oh, you know, the child is so respectful that, you know, silence is lauded because it is respectful, and so it gets reinforced. And in that way, people don't learn the skills to negotiate and navigate these points, these crossroad points in relationships. And silence becomes the default mechanism. And when we're talking about personal development, personal growth, it is about these edges of learning, you know, the balance between the ebb and flow, the dilation and the constriction. What is a healthy balance there?
I mean, that's such a valuable point that you make there. I mean, it's such a valuable point that you do make there, because unfortunately it is, you know, especially being the parent of young children, it is almost tempting, and you have to consciously make an effort not to indulge sulking, you know.
Yeah.
Suddenly so-and-so is very quiet and, you know, doesn't want to say anything, doesn't want to play or whatever the case is.
Yeah.
And it's easier for you to, oh, my baby, what's wrong? Come sit with me and blah, blah, blah. And that sort of reinforces the notion that if I want something, if there's a conflict or I'm unhappy about something, that's how I conduct it. And the other problem is from a traditional perspective, and as South Africans, we're deeply traditional that way.
Yeah.
Children should be seen, not heard.
Seen, not heard, And so we don't develop that vocabulary to express in constructive ways, right? When we sulk, maybe somebody eventually will give in, and that's what silent treatment is about. If I punish them by sulking, they will give in, hopefully. That's the internal script that's playing out, and many times it is unconscious. And so when we're talking about personal growth and personal development, it is about how do I constructively verbalize and engage in relationship when we hit these crossroads with each other.
I mean, that's such a valuable point that you're raising there as well. And I guess it then goes back to what you said earlier about being introverted versus being extroverted. It doesn't become a hard and fast rule, because I could be introverted, but I still, through my socialization, develop the skills to be able to deal with conflict. And I don't just...
And that's where we talk about ambiversion, right? The ability to be ambidextrous, so to speak. To be able to navigate both sides. Because, for an extrovert... The growth or their learning is to wait it out. It's not urgent. It's not life and death, right? And it is about, is this the right time to deal with things? Is this the right way to deal with things? It is about learning to defer gratification.
Which is also a skill in itself, because, I mean, at the opposite end of the silent treatment is an and I know I'm an extrovert, for example. If I feel that there's beef looming between Corsi and I might want to talk about it now while we're at a dinner party, and it's not the best time or place, you know.
Absolutely. So that's the growth point for extroverts. Whereas introverts, their growth is about showing up more. It is about the willingness to engage more, the skill to engage more, to at least even negotiate that boundary that says, okay, instead of just like a total shutdown, can we kind of negotiate levels of showing up, of engagement, and when they feel stressed because perhaps they feel overwhelmed, to be able to express that I'm struggling now. It feels too much for me. I need to take a pause. And it is developing that understanding with each other. That's what relationality is about. Relationships are not about making us happy necessarily. They are about making us conscious, firstly, of our own blind spots, of our own suitcases that we carry with us. And those will play out in the relationship. And it is through that rub between those two that we grow ourselves, and then we can be happy.
I mean, Khosi, two things stand out then for me in our conversation here is that obviously the silent treatment is counterproductive. It's not very healthy. But then also at the opposite end, we then also should then develop those skills to be able to confront each other in a meaningful way.
Absolutely.
I hate to say productive because it sounds, you know, like we're talking business talk there, but
yeah,
you know, that even if I am then going to, if I'm not going to just remain silent on an issue, that when I do confront you on an issue, whatever's disturbing me or bothering,
anything goes.
Yeah, yeah.
It's to be able to express myself in such a way that you feel safe enough that you can avail yourself to hear me out and consider what I'm putting on the table for your consideration. And with the understanding that we won't necessarily always agree. And it is about how do we then continue to engage such that we can even arrive at agreeing to disagree, because that is the form of understanding that we can reach with each other.
Which is obviously, you know, at that level where you want it. And that's true, isn't it? Is that all too often I find it's easier for me, for example, on this platform, talk radio, where I'm speaking to strangers, I'm speaking to, you know, I don't necessarily know everyone intimately that I'm engaging with on air. And let's say we have a heated debate. All too often the conversation ends with let's agree to disagree, and you know, no hard feelings, no one's upset, we go our separate ways and we move on with our lives and we're happy. But you try it with someone that you know intimately, a partner, a parent, a friend, a sibling. You say let's agree to disagree. All too often it's a case of no, I want you to see my point of view, I want you to agree with me.
And that's usually because there's generally a history and pattern to that relationship. You see what you're saying about radio. It's an in the moment conversation, and in the other context, there is usually a history of it's always your way. I never get my way. You know, those forms of absolutes, and so therefore a person feels hard done by, and it is about seeking to assert the self, seeking to honor the self, because perhaps they feel that if they don't, their needs don't get met. And so they feel compromised in that relationship. And so the skill is about how do we work to honor mutuality.
So I guess this is the point at which, Khosi, I say to you goodbye. Have a wonderful day, and let's see when we talk again.
Thank you. You have a great day.
All the best. Thank you. That was Khosi Gyani.